This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Like my cape? Pretty cool, huh? While I can predict that some superheroes are going to zoom into our studios later this hour and talk about why we believe in them, why we need superheroes, how superheroes took center stage in pop culture in America, while all that's going to happen this hour, the superheroes are not going to save us.
Now, our operation is small, but there's a lot of potential for aggressive expansion. So which of you fine gentlemen would like to join our team?
Sorry, Iron Man, Avengers, all the rest. Superheroes have bailed on this Washington, D.C. government shutdown job. But as the huge Comic-Con convention kicks off today in New York, tell us about your favorite superhero. It could be someone without a cape who had a big influence on your life. Aunt Betty, anyone? We want to hear superheroes writ large, writ small. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. But later this hour, we'll hear about some real heroes working tirelessly to find a cure for Alzheimer's. Plus, we'll have a stop in Kentucky where one governor seems to be pulling off a political maneuver only a political superhero could manage in a red southern state. But first, special ops in Washington.
The president approved both operations. In both Libya and Somalia. These were separate operations, approved separately. When an approval like this happens, there is obviously discretion given to commanders as to when they initiate and fulfill those missions. So it is a coincidence that they happened at the same time.
That's White House Press Secretary Jay Carney earlier this week talking about two operations in Libya and Somalia. Operatives capturing a senior al-Qaeda leader in Tripoli, Libya, thought to be the mastermind behind the 1998 bombings of U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. And in Somalia, a SEAL team failed at their mission to capture a senior leader of al-Shabaab known as Ikrima. The Special Operations Forces were forced to withdraw after a firefight with militants. What does this aggression and these two nearly simultaneous events mean? Do they mark a significant shift in U.S. tactics, a shift that's been happening over the last decade from boots on the ground to a special operations only approach to the Middle East? And has the U.S. taken up a fundamentally new policy on how it deals with a region in turmoil? Joining me is Linda Robinson, senior international policy analyst at RAND and author of 100 Victories, Special Ops and the Future of American Warfare. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Glad to be with you.
So, Linda, it's been well known that the Pentagon has been trying to shift to a special operations command to have a lot of small off-the-shelf operations to deal with various tactical missions that the White House and the CIA are interested in, and the Pentagon for that matter. But do you sense here that special ops is becoming the tactic and perhaps strategy of choice of dealing with the Middle East, a region that is in turmoil right now? Forget about the policy and the negotiations and the diplomacy. We're just going to handle each crisis as it comes and use special ops.
There has been a shift, I think, quite decisively away from using conventional forces in large numbers. So you're absolutely right there. There's a defense strategic guidance, which is what it's formally called, that really does emphasize the so-called small footprint approach to dealing with security threats. And of course, that's what special operations forces do. But I think there's also an evolution in how special operations forces are used. And this past May, a little bit of that was revealed in a speech President Obama gave at the National Defense University, indicating there was going to be a tightening up of the criterion for the use of the drones, which of course have been very controversial. So that is one reason why I think you saw in this weekend the use of raids, i.e., special ops guys put on the ground rather than drone strike.
So boots on the ground are preferred to drones in these particular cases?
In small numbers, yes. But then there's a third way, of course, in which special ops are employed, and that's using partners and with partners, and that usually occurs with the consent of and participation of the country's government and forces in which they're operating.
And if you don't have that participation, and having that participation might be perceived as difficult in unstable Egypt right now, or Libya for that matter. Yemen might be also a difficult case. Do we see the U.S. Concluding that large areas of these Arab Spring, so-called Arab Spring countries, are devolving into new Somalias, Afghanistans, basically becoming bases of operations for terrorist groups, and that these special ops kinds of operations are going to be increasing in areas that we once thought of as allies.
Well, this is why I'd like to make a distinction and just use maybe Libya and Somalia as opposite examples of what's going on. There are certainly advocates of the unilateral use of special ops forces and advocates within the administration that they think just going in and taking out that target unilaterally is a sufficient response. And of course, there has been a protest from the Libyan government to picking up of Abu Anas al-Libi in Libya. I would like to note, of course, there was a U.S. indictment of him, so there is some legal cover for that move. But the case of Somalia is a little bit different because the government there did condone that raid. And more importantly, Somalia has been the scene of a very heavily partnered effort. Special operations forces have been involved supporting a United Nations and African Union peace enforcement mission. They've been training up Ugandan and Kenyan forces, high-end units there, that were credited with a lot of the success in pushing al-Shabaab out of Mogadishu and retaking Kismayo, a key port city in the south. So that is a more mixed picture where you don't just have this unilateral use of force, but in fact a pretty heavy reliance on partners. And that is where there is strong support within the special ops community for going that route, because you have less political and diplomatic blowback, and ultimately it is those countries that need to secure their own territory. But it's a long-term approach, and this is why some people in the administration don't like it, because they think it takes too long. It requires getting involved with countries' forces that frankly need a lot of professionalization.
But it is an opportunity in places like Yemen and Libya and perhaps Egypt to have boots on the ground and to conduct tactical operations. Linda Robinson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Linda Robinson is author of 100 Victories, a book all about special ops, the future of American warfare. She's a senior international policy analyst at RAND.